Welcome. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio. Listening to Evolver Planet Radio. What is up, Evolver Planet? Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jonah Bull. Today is Friday, November 25th, 2011. And as always, Evolver Planet Radio is brought to you in part by Helixilea.com. That's H-E-L-I-X-I-L-E-H.com. The new interactive Flower of Life board game. And on the show tonight, that music was from Matt Venuti at mattvenuti.com. Also coming up, the guests, we have Brad Collins and Linda Starwolf. And the second half of the show, we have Darren Durda. And Darren's going to talk about his new book coming out as well. And as always, Evolver Planet Radio always supports the Occupy movement. Check out OccupyTheNation.com, and we'll talk about that a little bit more with our guests. And just to give you a little background on Matt Venuti, just because we'll be playing his music throughout the show, Matt is a composer and performer. Matt forged a distinctive style using an extraordinary breathe-driven synthesizer as his primary instrument. He and his band, the Venutians, made unique contributions to the budding genres of world fusion, ambient, and jam-based music. Using both traditional and contemporary instruments, they were innovators of sound and style that would become a staple in the world of special and gala events, where they maintain a strong presence to this day. And his music is amazing. You'll be hearing it throughout the show. And it's also a CD with Starwolf's newest book that she has out, which is The Visionary Shamanism. And Brad and Starwolf, are you live in the show?
Hi, Jonah.
Hi, Jenna.
Hey, thank you both for joining us on Evolver Planet Radio. And first, let's go into the newest book, Visionary Shamanism. Starwolf, tell us all about it.
Well, Visionary Shamanism is an outgrowth of many years of working personally on myself and working with many people, trying to find the best ways to transform ourselves and feeling a real urgency, if you will, for transformation, as I said before, in my own life and also on the planet. It's something that ever since I was a child that I have felt, not really knowing or understanding why I felt that way. And it's only become clear, really, in the last 20 years of my life as to why that's so. But I believe that we're in a powerful time of death and rebirth on our planet. We're in a real shamanic portal of transformation. And I believe that the visionary shamanism piece is something that's important to all of us, that we all have an inner shaman. We all have a part of us that needs to be able to allow parts of ourselves that are no longer useful, that are outworn, old programming, both family of origin programming, cultural programming, civilization programming, that we need to let die now so that we can birth a new earth, birth a new consciousness, and move forward in our lives.
Amen. Well said. And I agree 100% with that. And the Evolver family, they are very much into ayahuasca journeys, shamanism, a lot of the people that put articles into Reality Sandwich are very in with the shamanism. It's a very powerful way of being. And that's, as far as I understand, is that we all are shamans in our own unique ways. And all of us are masters. And this is the time for us to step onto our mastery and undo ourselves from the programming. And this book also accompanies a CD. Tell us about the CD and the amazing music we're listening to.
Well, Matt Venuti is a longtime friend of mine and Brad's, and we lived in San Francisco for a number of years and met him actually out there in the band called the Venusians. And Matt was recently just here at our retreat center in Western North Carolina called Isis Cove Retreat Center. We did a concert here, and he's traveling and really taking the Hong out into the world. Hong means hand. It's a very, I guess you could say, new paradigm instrument, although Matt sometimes calls it more of a structure than an instrument. And it has a very special quality to it that really is able to open up the chakras of the body pretty quickly. And along with the breath, you find yourself in an altered state without actually needing to ingest anything. So for those individuals, for whatever reasons, that it's not safe for them or they don't want to go that direction, simply the breath and the music itself is enough to really catapult someone into a powerful, transformative, and altered state. And of course, the only reason that I think that, you know, we want to get into an altered state at this time, because I think it's really important to be sober at this time on our planet and to take a very sober look around us and see what's happening, is to be altered, is to expand our awareness and our consciousness beyond the, you know, rush hour traffic hamburger stand consciousness that we're living in.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I've noticed with star children and people who are very open to these energies that are hitting the planet, a lot of us have and still continue to pick up different addictions to sort of not feel these uncomfortable energies because we don't know what they are.
That is so true, Jonah, and I'm so glad you brought that up. I can't tell you how many times I say this to people, especially to young people and to young people's parents, because I myself was, you know, somebody, I did an interview with Aloha Andrew in Sedona last week, a 90-minute interview, and he really wanted me to talk about my life. So I spent about the first hour talking about my life, and he suddenly popped in and he said, "Wow, Star Wolf, you know, in 1952, you were an indigo child." And I said, "Yeah, I was. You know, I didn't know that until just recently." And now the world is really populated with a lot of people like myself, and I had a hard time fitting into mainstream. I've always had a difficult time doing that, and yet I've worked at it very hard until finally I kind of gave up and said, you know, that normal is just a setting on the washing machine. I'm not ever going to be normal. And I think I went to work in the mental health field and in addictions and all those things, trying to heal myself. But in my younger years, especially in the 60s, when, you know, there was so much going on and drugs were so plentiful, and at that time, for me, I feel like that I didn't use drugs so much to get high. I used drugs to feel normal. You know, I was trying to medicate my sensitivities. And we have so many starseed children, as you put it, and adolescents and young adults and maybe even some older adults that are just really looking to be on this planet that never really fit into the culture as it's existed and have been so sensitive. It's so easy to pick up an addiction, whether it's watching TV all day, certain junk foods, substances of all kinds, attitudes, beliefs, all of those can be highly addictive and take us out of who it is we really are.
Absolutely, and that's what's so unique about the Evolver family, is that so many people are spreading awareness on, you know, the different types of stuff like ayahuasca, a journey you could do, and just the shamanic breath work you could do to reconnect ourselves where we don't need these drugs and alcohol and stuff to discern or stop feelings that we don't understand. So the shamanic breathwork that you do, where did that derive from? How did you learn it?
Well, I've been on a search ever since I was, like I said, as a child. And my grandmother was a very natural kind of person, and I grew up in, out in, with animals and creatures, and she taught me to speak to animals and trees from the time I was 3 or 4 years old. And so that was a very natural process for me. In my teen years, after she died, I ended up going the route of doing lots of drugs and drinking, including LSD and other substances. And eventually, in my 20s, I wound up very addicted to all of those substances, and also I ended up in the hospital. By 29, I was through. I was really through with anything outside of me to try and alter my consciousness anymore and to try and make me feel normal. And I began a search then, even though in the 20s, in my teens and 20s, I had been studying Hinduism and meditation. TM was very big at that time, yoga, all that kind of thing. It wasn't until I hit about 29 and went into my early 30s that I got really serious about looking at ways to really transform, not just put a Band-Aid on something, not just to give a diagnosis on something, but to really transform my consciousness. And I really, even though I began to, I guess you could say, began to ground and be able to not be in chaos in my life so much at that time, at the same time, I really started giving up the idea that I was going to fit in with mainstream culture, which that was a huge relief for me when that started happening in my mid-30s. And that's when I went out and I found things like holotropic breathwork, integrative breathwork with teachers, and I began to work with several shamanic teachers. I worked with a Mayan shaman named Eric Gonzalez. I worked with Grandmother Twyla, who's the Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother who passed a few years ago. I became one of her adopted granddaughters. I worked with a Cherokee teacher. And for me, my path has not been the path of taking anything at all, ingesting anything. I mean, I know many people who do, and that's a valid path for them. But my path really became the path of opening up to what I call the Aquarian shaman, that inside of us, we, and all around us, that we have this thing called the imaginal selves, C-E-L-L-S, just like the caterpillar does. Just like the caterpillar imagines itself into being a butterfly through its own process, we have that as well. And we are imagining ourselves right now, or hopefully we're beginning to imagine ourselves into a new creation. And that's what the energies of so many of us who feel like we don't fit in with the world as it is, that we don't fit in with the denseness of some of the consciousness, you know, as I called it before, the rush hour traffic, you know, hamburger stand consciousness, that we're making that shift from deep within ourselves. So I took all of those things together, my life experience, my own personal addictions, my years as an addiction specialist, a mental health counselor, my years in as a transpersonal therapist, my years of studying indigenous and Native American and Mayan studies, my Jungian studies, everything that I had learned personally and working, you know, probably one of the biggest things I took that brought this was, you know, 20-something years already, because I've had almost 40 years experience of working with people and what really works with people in the process of change. So the shamanic breath work is not only the breath, it is art, music, community, breathing, journeying, drumming, processing, sharing, soul retrieval work. It's many different things. But its purpose is to get rid of these old programs that we have that are archaic and that are taking us and our world down, and to open us up to our bigger selves and allow these imaginal selves to come in and create the same process that happens to the butterfly, or I should say the caterpillar, to become the butterfly.
Absolutely. And there's also a new kind of minister which is helping people from all walks of life, and that is the Shamanic Ministers Global Network. And how can it help us to really accelerate our spiritual evolution? What is this Ministers Global Network, the shamanic?
Well, Jonah, the The Shamanic Ministers Global Network is a network that we formed about 3 or 4 years ago to support people who are really drawn to being agents of change in the world. And all of them are individuals who have transformed their own lives. And then they're holding space for other people to do that in their lives. And, you know, this is really new paradigm ministry or new paradigm process of change as compared to the old way of a doctor, a priest, an authority telling you the way you needed to do it. The shamanic minister is someone who understands that when a person is in a process of death and rebirth, leaving behind an old way and coming into the new, that it's a very natural process. It's a natural process like an oak tree growing. It's a natural process like the trees that just lost all their leaves. And you know, when those trees drop their leaves, they weren't crying, oh no, oh no, oh no, I'm losing everything. They know in their being, because they're close to the earth, they've been through it so many times, oh, my leaves are falling, but they'll come back, and I need to go into the quiet now. And I believe that human beings have the same process of change ingrained in us to go through death and rebirth. And a shamanic minister is a person who has been through that themselves and can hold that space for another person. A good way to understand it, Jonah, is, you know, I'm sure you have some midwife friends who are very comfortable around the process of birth and have worked hard at demedicalizing birth. You know, they're trained to see dangerous signs that might be a difficult medical condition, but they understand that birth is a natural process. And they're there to support the mother and baby going through their natural process of change. In the same way that a midwife is there to support the process of the birth, shamanic ministers are trained to support real transformation of ourselves, of our consciousness, of our way of being in the world.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I like most about your guys' work, so what you do is, like you said, you had a person attend one of your things out at Isis Cove that is actually 17 years old. And I think that the youth is so important right now to get this information to. Because just to give you an example, and this was amazing for me, I was just at the gym this last week, and afterwards they have a pool there. I went for a swim, and there were some other people, some actually college students in the pool, and one of them I knew from an extra neighbor. I said, how you doing? And one of them said to me, hey, you know that thing you were talking about the other time, the meditation thing, I want to try that. I want to learn how to do that. And I was like, sure. I was like, let me ask you a question. Do you ever feel anything right here in between your eyes? And she, yeah. So I asked the other guys, there's three guys there. Hey, you guys, come here. You guys ever feel anything in the middle of your head? They're like, yeah, I feel it all the time. What is that? Oh, it's your third eye. I mean, they're feeling it. The kids are feeling it, but they don't know. They don't know what that is. They don't know what's going on because the information is not out there to the masses yet, and that's part of my work and what I'm doing. And they're feeling it. The energies are here, and everyone's a shaman in their own ways, and it's time because we're physically feeling these changes now. It was amazing. All five kids in the pool have been feeling their third eye, but none of them know what it is. And these energies are here, and it's great work that you reach out to the young people because they're really the leaders of tomorrow. And that's one of the reasons why I started the show, is to talk to the kids and why I play the electronic music and really reach out to them, because there's no one. There's very few people reaching out to the kids, and they're so important to this new earth and where we're headed to. And tell us about the Venus Rising Institute and what you guys do and the programs that you have.
Well, Venus Rising Association of Transformation has several programs. We have the Shamanic Breathwork Training Program, so we train facilitators. We have the Shamanic Ministers Global Network, so we work with people to become the kind of people that can, as Brad said, hold space for people's transformation. So they don't consider themselves that person's healer. They consider themselves that person's support. And as a minister, as a pastoral counselor. And so the Shamanic Ministers global network. We ordain people. It's our board that does that, and we have people actually worldwide. We just had someone in our training program here for a month long who came through the accelerated program from South Africa, somebody else from Italy, Sedona, wow. California, New York City, from Atlanta, from Illinois, from Kentucky. We had people from all over that came to come through that accelerated program to become ministers and be able to hold that support for people. Also, we have been sanctioned through the University of North Carolina board that works with people to be non-licensure universities, such as a Baptist college or a Buddhist college. And so we are a shamanic psycho-spiritual college, which was quite a, I guess you could say, victory for Venus Rising, that we were sanctioned to be a non-licensured college, but we are now considered to be a religious college. Of course, we consider it, we use the word spiritual, but that's what the state calls it. And so we are able to give people, award people bachelor's, master's, and PhDs and doctorate of ministry degrees now through their studies with us and also through different people that we acknowledge as professors and who meet certain criteria to teach with us. And we bring other people here that we are really turned on by and that we think have a good message to work with our students, and we open it up to the public as well. You may be aware of a teacher named Andrew Harvey who teaches sacred activism. He was just here with us. If you don't know him, I'd encourage you to go on his website, which is the Institute for Sacred Activism, and he's a wonderful teacher and mystic and scholar, Oxford scholar, and good friend of ours. He was here. He brought a great crowd, and he brought a great message to people. This weekend, we have Leonard Orr. Some people may be aware of who Leonard Orr is. Leonard Orr is really, I guess you could say, the most famous rebirther. He's the one who brought and created really rebirthing in the United States back in the 1960s, 1970s. He brought that energy over from the guru in India named Babaji, who's known as an immortal. So we have people, we had Matt Venuti here back in the summer with a concert and doing the Hong journeys, the visionary shamanism. So we have all kind of things going on here at Isis Cove Retreat Center, which is the home for Venus Rising Association for Transformation. We're a community. We have about 15 households here of people who own land and who are connected in this little village that we've created outside of Cherokee in Asheville, North Carolina. But in addition to that, we have a retreat center here where people come from all over the world. In our property here, we have a beautiful 37 sacred stone medicine wheel, which was brought to us through Wind Daughter and the Bear Tribe. And each stone weighs about 2 tons, and it's beautifully arranged. We have a labyrinth, we have a spirit temple deck, we have a fire temple area, and we're in the process of creating more spaces. We have a little sanctuary and an art temple here too. So we have a lot going on, and you know, as I said before, I've been writing a lot of books. I've written 6 books or co-authored 6 books in the past 6 years. I have 2 books coming out next year, so we have been very, very busy because we feel that this is the time, really, that we're here for. Both Brad and I and all the people we work with and all the people that show up here really are feeling that urgency, just like probably a caterpillar would feel who was walking around and just munching on leaves and hanging out and all of a sudden started climbing and inching its way up a tree and out on the edge of a branch, and from its own body created a chrysalis in which it was to dissolve itself and birth itself into a new being. And that's really what we're feeling, that this is our time to really bring forth our programs. You know, I just heard a woman in San Francisco who interviewed me the other day. She said, "So if you need to be much more mainstream, because it's like what you're saying, Joan, about the kids in the pool, everyone needs to hear this message. This is not just for, you know, the edge dwellers anymore." And because I always considered myself an edge dweller, she said, "This is for mainstream." And I think she's right, that this really is something, you know, these processes, breathwork, the university, Venus Rising University, the shamanic ministers, Breathe America, all these things and programs now are for our world. And we all need to, all of us closet shamans need to come out of the closet.
Absolutely. I'm in agreement with that. And I find that a lot with talking just to the very, very big spiritual community here. Even the people that I talk to, like yourselves, a lot of times are like, well, we don't have no one to talk about this to. And people, you know, say things. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There is so much information out there. I mean, everyone, even with it, whether they know it or not, like the kids, they're feeling it. And all it takes is an explanation. Once I told them, I was like, well, that's your third eye. One of the kids was like, a third eye? I got a third eye? Yeah, did you hear this? I got a third eye. And they start talking about it. I'm like, that's what's up. You know, just now let them go home and Google it. And they're off. They just need to hear it.
And, you know, whether I'm, you know, in a service station or sitting on the plane next to someone, and I'm not only this, you know, I'm not unique in this way. All these people we're training when they're going out, we're not just training people who've, you know, studied a lot with shamans. We're training people who have been social workers, electricians, engineers, attorneys, physicians, nurses, you know, and then we do, of course, train the massage therapists, the Qigong people and all of that. But we're, one day we did it, we had a group and we had about 20 people. And in that group, there was a real estate broker, there was an accountant, there was an attorney, there was an ophthalmologist, there was, you know, a doctor's wife. It was like this, the people that are being trained to do this work now and going out are doing this everywhere. We, you know, the president of the American Board of Holistic Medicine is one of our ministers and breathwork facilitators. Wow. And they've taken, we have people who have taken this work out for years, actually, kind of undercover to physicians and nurses and things like that. But it's not undercover anymore because this is our time. We don't have time anymore to hide out and to be lost in addictions or old programs or to be afraid of speaking up and talking about these things. When I first started using the word shamanism, about 25 years ago and really started using it publicly 20 years ago, honestly, people didn't know what that word was. Sure, there were people, some people, but the mainstream did not know it. You can go on and Google the shamanic world or shamanic breathwork or visionary shamanism or shaman now and literally get millions of hits of information from it. And that there's a reason for that. It's an awakening that's happening. You know, the word shaman itself, part of what that means is the wounded healer, the one who remembers how to die and be reborn and to heal themselves, to heal their village, to heal the planet, and to teach others how to heal themselves. And that's where, you know, it's a perfect metaphor, it's a perfect word, in addition to the traditional shamans that are out there right now that are teaching people that we have this within us all. So it really is a time of awakening to that shaman within.
Absolutely. And real quickly, when I was just on a trip recently down south over the summer with Pancho, one of the crystal skulls, the ancient skull, I met an old friend down there, and he had no clue what was happening to him. But what was happening to him is these energies are coming through him, and he's like, I'm doing fire ceremonies and water ceremonies, and I'm just taking water and my group of friends, and I'm holding hands with them, and the information is channeling, it's coming through him as a shaman. And he has no clue what he's doing except these messages. And he's 24 years old. His name is Ted. I'm actually having him on the show in a couple weeks because he has just blossomed this last year. And it just happened about a year ago that these energies started coming through him. And he's doing these shamanic, these ceremonies with other people. And he doesn't even know what he's doing because the information isn't mainstream yet, which is why it's so important for us to continue to do our work. But these kids, these people are feeling it. They're doing things they don't even know what they're doing, but they're being guided. And we have lots of help from all of our, you know, angelic beings all the way to the great teachers that were already here with all their work they left behind for us to learn about this stuff. And it's amazing times. I'm very fortunate to be alive and to experience this shift of consciousness. And everyone should be because it's no one really knows what's going ahead, but it's all for the better of the planet. It's all for the better of humanity. So it's all good to go. It's just going to be a little bumpy as it has been, you know, before things finally shift. But before we go, Brad, tell us a little bit about the future plans you guys have for the Isis Cove and the Venus Rising Institute. What are some upcoming things you guys are doing?
Jonah, we are out here in Western North Carolina near Silva, North Carolina, near the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. And we've been really blessed with 50 acres of land, and we've created these temples to the elements of earth, water, fire, air, and spirit. And I loved your story about your friend from down south, because one of the premises of shamanism is that we are all related, that all of us has a part of ourselves that understands the words of the stones, the words of the standing people, the words of water, the language of air. And that's really our birthright as human beings. So we have a community out here. We have a retreat center. We have workshops. And people can learn about that at shamanicbreathwork.org. And that also, you know, our university, our Venus Rising University for Shamanic Studies, for Shamanic Psycho-Spiritual Studies, is really growing quickly because we want to provide education for life. You know, how to be the shaman that each of us, it's our birthright to tap into our true relationship to the world.
Absolutely. And once again, Visionary Shamanism is Linda Starwolf's newest book. And you can get more information at shamanicbreathwork.org. Brad Starwolf, again, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show with us.
Thank you, Jonah. We really enjoyed
it. Jonah.
Come see us when you can.
I will. You know I will. And I was
come
just out there
with
not
us.
Too recently.
Come to Breathe America.
Absolutely. And I love the energy and have been out there a couple times. And it is an amazing retreat center and amazing ground you guys have. And it's awesome to have you in the network. You are amazing beings of light. And thank you both again for the work you're doing.
Thank you for the work you're doing, too, Jonah. We appreciate it.
Thank you. And with that, we'll listen to a little bit more of the Matt Venuti album. And after that, we'll be joined by Darren Durda. and welcome back. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio. That is some more of the Matt Venuti album that accompanies the Visionary Shamanism, a book by Linda Starwolf. And now joining us on the show is none other than Darren Durda, who is a contributor to the Reality Sandwich Network and also has a new book, which we're going to talk about. Darren, are you on the air? Darren, can you hear me? Okay, maybe he isn't on the air. Let's try now. Darren, are you there? Darren, maybe you have mute on, but I cannot hear you. And we'll just go ahead and give out his newest book, which is The Four Global Truths, Awakening to the Peril and the Promise of Our Times. And I'll talk a little bit. We'll try to get Darren on a different line or something. The station will try to get him on. And Darren is a article contributor to the Reality Sandwich website and has a few articles up there. So if you go on realitysandwich.com, check out Darren Durda. It's D-A-R-R-I-N. It's Durda, which is D-R-D-A. And you can check out some of his articles, his recent ones, and you could check out some information on that. Also, if you go to the website, thefourglobaltruths.com, that is Darren's newest book. It came out October 25th. He does have an expert from it up on the Reality Sandwich website. I believe it is titled The Third Matrix, which is from his book, and that I think is his latest article up on there, so you could check that out. He's also going to be involved with the group that's out there, the Evolver group, and take part in that. And he's also taking part in something called the Awakening the Dreamer, which we'll talk to Darren when he gets on. Let's see. Darren, are you with us? No. Still having some phone troubles. All right, we'll keep trying to get him. Anyway, so you check out the fourglobaltruths.com, and you'll see Darren's newest book, The Four Global Truths, Awakening to the Peril and the Promise of Our Times. It is a perfect book for what is going on right now in the world, which we talked about the Occupy Wall Street movement. We've talked about just the military complex going crazy here in the U.S. with NATO and everything else. And things are winding up, and things are getting and building up to something big and amazing that is happening. And let's try again. Darren, are you with us?
Hello, hello.
Hey, there we go. All right, had a little phone trouble before. Thank you for joining us on the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Jonah.
Excellent. Now, I just mentioned that your newest article on the Reality Sandwich is an actual part of your new book that came out, which is The Four Global Truths, and that article was The Third Matrix. Tell us a little bit about the actual chapter and article you put up recently on Reality Sandwich.
Right. That particular excerpt is from the third chapter or third section, I guess you would say, of the book. The name of the book is The Four Global Truths, so it's pretty neatly organized into four discrete little sections. Of course, there's an introduction at the beginning and a little epilogue, but and the four sections are basically drawn from the core teachings of all Buddhist traditions, which is the Four Noble Truths. So I've sort of taken that very robust framework of the Four Noble Truths and just extended it to apply basically to the whole earth, kind of the truth of, or the reality of global suffering, which I focus pretty much on the kind of the biospheric elements and the elements of the natural world that are in decline, and then how that affects us individually as humans and collectively. And then the second truth is the roots of that, sort of what is, you know, what's brought us to this point in our evolutionary story. And then the third thing is the prognosis, basically. Are we going to make it through this difficult, challenging period, which is also a very exciting period? And then finally, there's the fourth chapter, which is the what I call the road to recovery, which is basically a sort of takeoff on the Eightfold Path that the Buddha offers in his teachings. So this particular the article that you mentioned is from the third chapter, and it's called The Third Matrix, Humanity's Rite of Passage. So it basically talks about this idea that I think you know, most listeners will be pretty aware of, and that I've heard you kind of mention even with your previous guests, is that we're in a period of trial, initiation, if you would, as a species. Humanity is in this stage, and we're kind of being pushed or pulled through the birth canal, however you want to see it, and into a sort of more fuller expression of our being. And the old stories that we've held in common for quite some time now are no longer serving us, and we're moving on to hopefully something, a brighter chapter in our evolutionary story.
Now, the four global truths, Awakening to the Peril and the Promise of Our Times, is an amazing title in a book for actually what is happening right now. And the four global truths, where did this, the actual concept, derive from? How long ago did you come up with this concept and idea to write a book like this?
Yeah, well, I've been studying Buddhism for some time, probably about 10 or 15 years. It's been part of my relatively regular practice. Although, you know, sort of ironically, like most Buddhists, I'm a little reluctant to say I am a Buddhist and label myself one. Sure. But yet, the teachings have been very powerful for me in the practices as well. So, somewhere along the line, this title actually, before anything else manifested, this title manifested, and I kept kicking around in the back of my mind, you know, four global truths. What could that even possibly mean? It kind of sounds catchy and interesting. How, as it worked out, I sort of just had this idea in my mind, and as it worked out, I moved to California and went to this wonderful grad school called the California Institute for Integral Studies, and in particular, I was in this program that was called Philosophy, Cosmology, and Consciousness, which I kind of like to tell everybody is really kind of the study of everything. There's very little that's left out underneath that umbrella. So when I was studying that program with some really wonderful teachers, basically the rest of the book kind of, in a sense, was downloaded to me. I felt as though the pieces that were missing suddenly came into place. I mean, I already knew a little bit about the first, you know, what I would call the first global truth, which is that the world is in a state of crisis, ecologically, economically, and so forth. You know, those that awareness was already pretty solid in my mind, but I wasn't quite sure of, you know, what was causing it, or, you know, how I could work through this seeming impasse. And then through the work that I did in my master's program, I sort of came to the realization that this is a book that just really was longing to be written. You know, I mean, I share the experience of a lot of authors that the book itself was more powerful than what I had to bring to it. You know, in many ways, I was just a channel for some truths that needed to be spoken in a particular way, and was lucky enough to have the time and the diligence to sit down and write the thing out and give it expression in the real world.
Awesome, and that's what's up. And you hit a key point where you said you're lucky and happy and fortunate to be, you know, ready and willing and able to receive this, like you said, channeled information and be able to put it out to the world, because there's so much information coming in right now, and there's so many great outlets to get it out there, and stuff like this book, should be and hopefully will be mainstream enough where, you know, the work you do and I do and everyone else does really starts affecting people to the masses, because that's really where we need your work, the four global truths.
Yeah.
You know, people need this information. They just need to hear it. And it's life-changing.
Yeah.
It's conscious-changing. And
it is, yeah. Just, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's actually kind of the audience that I had in mind for the book. Where I felt that this message was needing to be delivered and go was towards, I mean, I wouldn't say the middle of the mainstream, but it's what I call the marginal mainstream. People who are ready to hear these messages, and they have some kind of intuitive sense that something big is happening, but they don't quite have the language for it yet, or they don't quite have the framework for it yet. So one of the things that my book does, and I hope will be successful in doing, is providing this kind of framework for people to really understand what's going on a bigger scale. I mean, we all have our, you know, very private experiences of what we're happening, whether they're what's happening to us, whether they're spiritual experiences we're having or shamanic experiences and so forth. And then we have experiences that we, in the wider net of our community, we see people sort of talking about the same things and interested in the same things, and and then of course in the culture at large, we see the Occupy movement and so forth, which again leads us to believe that something is happening. And then of course that extends across the world. I mean, the Occupy movement is just a small part actually of what's happening in so many different countries around the world. People basically waking up. So what I'm hoping is, again, is that the book will give a little bit of language and maybe some context for this planetary moment that we're experiencing.
Absolutely, and you opened up the can of worms right there. So let's jump into it with the Occupy Wall Street movement and how important that is, and how many things and history has been written on that. And indigenous tribes talked about it. The Indians, I mean, so many people have talked about it. Now it's happening. Now your book is out. And Occupy Wall Street, what sense do you get from it, Darren? I mean, what does it mean to you? How has it helped you with your book?
Yeah, well, there's a lot to say about it. First of all, it's just very exciting to me. It's something that people keep sort of repeating that phrase, we are the ones we've been waiting for, and it's really starting to feel really true. It's starting to feel, not just something that I've heard or read in a poem, a beautiful poem, but something that is taking on a real life of its own. And so for me, it did seem like a really interesting development in terms of the birth of this book, because it came out on October 25th, roughly about a month ago, and by that time the movement was really in full swing, and had gained momentum after a couple months, and just being able to feel that, tap into that energy of awakening, seeing it happen all over the world was kind of a validation, I guess, in some ways, that what I was feeling intuitively, what I was learning, a lot of these things are really happening. And there's another level to it to me, which is a bit slightly more esoteric, in that it has to do with astrological alignments, but it's something that those of us who study astrology have been in some ways anticipating for a while, because what's happening now is that the energy of the late 60s, throughout the 60s, but it really kind of peaked and coalesced at the end of the 60s, is now coming back into the collective field and coming back into the popular psyche. So from now until about 2020, we have this alignment that's a Uranus-Pluto square. These two planets were conjunct right in the late 60s, which happened to be the time that I was born. So from an astrologer's perspective, it's like people that are now my age are in some ways, or who were born during that particular period, which really would extend anywhere from the mid-60s to maybe 1972 or so, people who are in that age range are really now being called to sort of bring forth that energy that we all sort of carry in our own charts. And so for me, it was also a validation of that, sort of like this is my time now to really kind of step out with the gifts that I've learned through a lifetime of seeking and searching and learning. And it's going to happen again in another generation, but it just happens to be, for me, a time that's really exciting. And there's so much to be said about the movement itself. It's just a very hopeful thing, and again, just a sign that the world really is waking up. We've come to a point in our evolutionary journey where we realize, in most cases, a very difficultly learned way, that the structures that are now in place that are supposed to be taking care of us, and that are supposed to be providing safety, security, health, and well-being for all people, they're not working at all. In fact, most people on the planet are suffering quite a bit. And so it's just become really obvious that the system needs changing, and more people are waking up to that, whether it's because of their spiritual experiences or simply because they're having difficulties financially. And again, it's good for those people who are ready to hear the message, but yet don't quite have a framework, a way to situate their experience. It's really good for them to come across radio shows like yours and books like mine, and other people who are beginning to, who are and have been really talking about this shift in consciousness. So, to me, more than anything, it represents the Occupy movement represents this shift in consciousness, sort of written in a very tangible way.
Absolutely. And just to throw a plug out there for a new documentary that came out on 11/11/11, the documentary Thrive, I just took some time to watch that. That is an amazing documentary that really talks about everything that's going on, ties it all in. Very well done. And just to throw that out to the listeners, it's definitely something I would take the time and see. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's amazing.
Yeah, I have. I went and saw it on 11/11/11. It seemed like the thing to do. I heard a lot about it, and I just kind of wanted to be a part of it and see what all the hubbub was about. And sure enough, yeah, I found it to be a very, very powerful movie. In fact, I wrote a review on it, which is on Elephant Journal right now. Pretty sure it's just elephantjournal.com, and you can do a little search for keywords, and probably if you type in 11/11/11 or Thrive, both of those are in the title, so you can get my take on it. But
awesome.
I mean, I have a few critiques of it, but I think that in general it was a very powerful movie, and that it did manage somehow to capture the spirit of the times, the zeitgeist, even more than I think that zeitgeist movies did. You know, in a certain sense, it was more on point, and more structure of it was such that it was more accessible for a lot of people, and therefore much more powerful. So yeah, it's just another. I have no idea how the filmmaker managed to make it happen that way, because apparently the film's been some 8 years in the making, and maybe at least a decade or so before that in research and so on. So it's been a long time coming, and I guess it's just another mysterious manifestation of the energy of the times that we live in, and it just sort of happened to come out right now when the movement is taking off, and when more and more people are beginning to talk about the bigger issues and the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And I think also what it did for me was it sort of gave it like a middle class perspective view, because the credentials were there and the guy went to Princeton, and that's more of a documentary that if you showed it to like my family, they might be a little bit more open to accept the information versus showing like a David Icke or someone like that whose name has been trashed over the years and things like that. So already in their mind, like, oh, that's a conspiracy theorist. They put together a lot of good information, factual information, everything that they research is available at the end of the film, and it's pretty indisputable evidence. So I think they did a really good job. I definitely agree with you on that. And what's also this thing that you mentioned earlier when we talked, that's something you're involved in, which is Awakening the Dreamer. Tell us about what that is.
Yeah, Awakening the Dreamer has to do with there's an organization that was formed, I believe it was about 10 to 12 years ago, called the Pachamama Alliance. And this was a couple called Bill and Lynn Twist, who I think they were from somewhere in the California or at least West Coast area. And they went down to the rainforest to visit some indigenous peoples there. And I guess before that, the context is that they had been receiving some in their dreams. They had been receiving messages, basically, from different shamans in some of those cultures, where they like the Quechua people, and they had they didn't even know much about these cultures, but they were having these dreams where they were connecting with these people in their dreams, and then you know, apparently the same thing was happening to, they would find out later that same thing was happening to some of the shamans in the Quechua culture who were sort of meeting these white northerners in their dreams as well, because they're in fact a dream culture. You know, they wake up every morning and share their dreams, within the family and the group setting, and that determines how their day is going to go. So they actually live out of their dreams. And so what came out of this was this organization called the Pachamama Alliance, and they are dedicated to sort of a two-pronged approach. One of them is just preserving indigenous lands and rainforests in those areas of Ecuador and other parts of South America, at least in that particular region. And then the second approach is that they do this a number of programs here in the north, and one of them is called the Awakening the Dreamer Symposium. And basically what it is, it's a 2 to 3 to 4 hour long program where people come to a given location, usually like a library or someone's house if it's big enough. And there are presenters, facilitators, of which I'm in that category. I was trained as a facilitator a few years ago. And then what happens is they're exposed to the reality of basically what's going on right now. There's four parts to it, which actually sort of by coincidence echo the four parts of my book. It sort of looks at what's going on, you know, taking a good hard look at what's going on ecologically and socially and spiritually as well, in the Earth community right now. And then it moves on to, you know, what are the causes behind that? What are the things that are driving those, the various crises that we see manifesting? And then it goes on to say, well, what's the new story? What's the new story that we can live into, in, you know, in our lives and in our communities? And then finally, there's a kind of getting into action, aspect at the end where people, basically, you know, talk with one another and begin networking and begin to tapping into other local resources where they can get involved with sort of ways to change the paradigm in a very active way. So
awesome.
In general, the program is really beautiful at connecting head and heart in a way, because there's a lot of audiovisual information that's presented with just beautiful footage of, you know, various species and, you know, the natural world in general, just beautiful photography, and then, you know, just seeing how these things are being lost is really, just to see it in that context is very powerful and evokes an emotional response in most people, and then they're able to process these emotions in a group setting with one another, and then there's this realization, you know, like, hey, I'm not going through this alone, you know, my grieving for the Earth and Earth community is not something that I I'm going through alone, and I can share this experience with others and learn from their experience, and together we can move forward into a new way of being. So it's a very holistic, a very immersive experience for people to go through. And I wouldn't be involved if I didn't think that it was really effective in that way. And just, you know, I think that people need to they need to not only just sort of know what's going on. On Earth right now, and know maybe all the good things. I think there does have to be an exposure to the darker side of things, and the fact that we are losing, we are in the middle of a mass extinction, and we are losing so many of the world's treasures at a rate that's really just kind of staggering. In fact, we, you know, the full extent of it we can't really even process. I don't think we've really evolved yet quite
sure.
to a state where we can fully take that in. However, you know, just being able to access it a little bit and to realize that, you know, the grief that we feel, Joanna Macy is one of my mentors. She talks about this a lot, the idea that the grief that we feel for the Earth and for the Earth community and the species that are being lost is can be very powerful, because it can be transformed basically into an impetus for action. You know, the grief that
Absolutely.
We feel ultimately comes out of our love for the world and for one another, you know. And if we didn't have that love in our hearts, we wouldn't feel those emotions, and we wouldn't feel compelled to act in a way that's actually beneficial for the Earth community. Another person I really respect, his name is Thomas Gary. He's just passed away, but he was a theologian and someone who was very concerned with the shift of consciousness, which he called the Great Work. I actually forgot what I was going to say about Thomas Berry, but
well, that's actually good, because we're out of time, unfortunately, Darren. So you ended on a good note, and again, the website is theforglobaltruths.com, and you can check out Darren's newest book, Awakening to the Peril and the Promise of Our Times. And thank you so much, Darren, for taking the time and coming on the show, and we'll have you on again soon. Awesome. And for all the listeners out there, check out EvolverPlanetRadio.com for the archives, updates, information. And the next couple of weeks, we got some really cool people coming on the show from Australia, Boulder, Colorado. Got some cool musicians. So stay tuned. Evolver Planet Radio, Evolver fam. We will talk to you next week. Have a good night.